Cash is king. And so how do I start unlocking some of this trapped cash? The short answer is yes. The region has moved from just being a distributor of capital to also attracting it. This is a private business where CEOs never had to answer to anybody but himself and his family members who sit on the board.
Yes.
And all of a sudden you have an international investor who says, I love what you've done with the business, but these are my ideas.
Investors from all over the world fly in to raise capital, yeah, not to invest.
Projects that are being undertaken in this part of the world are
once in a lifetime.
Yeah, transformational.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Beyond the Deck here with Roland Berger. I'm Dorival Betancourt, your host, and I was really looking forward to this, to coming back, right? We had a little bit of a break. Of course, for obvious reasons, some challenges here in the region, but in true Gulf resilient spirit, we're now back and stronger than ever. And today we have a very, very critical topic we're going to be covering. We're going to be speaking about capital. Now, capital in the Gulf is not just about financial returns. It also plays a major role in terms of driving very ambitious economic transformation visions, building national champions, building whole new supply chains, and really positioning Gulf countries in the world. And to have that discussion, no one better than my esteemed colleague here at Roland Berger, Iyad Faraj, who is a partner within our transaction and investor services practice. He is from Bahrain and based in Bahrain, but works all across the GCC. So let's take it away. Welcome to the podcast, Iyad.
Thank you. What a pleasure. Thanks.
Great. It's great to have you. I've been trying to get you on here for a while.
I'm glad we could make it work.
We finally made it happen, right? So I think before we dive into the topics, I just want to talk just quickly about you, yourself and your career. So you have seen the investment world from multiple angles, right? From capital markets, investment banking, and of course now from the perspective of strategy consulting. So you don't come at this purely as a consultant. You've seen it in kind of a 360 way. If you just, throughout your career, if you just give us a little bit of an idea of how you've seen the investment landscape evolve here in the Gulf over the years.
Yeah, it's a really good question. And again, thanks for having me. I think when we think about how capital was deployed, a lot of it originally was driven by the public sector to think about investing in building out the economy. And a lot of that was hydrocarbon based, right? So a lot of the CapEx spend that we saw, a lot of the growth over, leading up to the last 10, 15 years, yes, has been focused in that direction. The capital deployed when we think about investments and returns was always cross-border outside of the respective country. And that was mainly used as a hedge against the reliance and the revenue that we were generating from oil, and also thinking about future generations.
Okay.
Over the last 10 years, things have started to change dramatically. That capital didn't have to only be deployed internationally. There was an idea of why don't we use some of this capital to start driving the economy that we want to get to? And how do we think about broadening the economy and moving away from just pure hydrocarbon reliance? So one of the main topics that you'll hear, or one of the main kind of markers, is non-oil GDP.
Yes.
And that's been the real focus that we've seen over, the last 10, 15 years.
Okay. So it's a move from a pure diversification from a portfolio perspective to a diversification actually from an economic fabric, right? So it's interesting that capital here in the Gulf has to wear these two hats, right? On one end, it's a pure, let's say, vehicle for financial returns, right? As one would expect from capital. And in the other sense, it actually has to be almost like a driver of policy.
Yeah.
Right? How do investors, what kind of challenges does that present, when you have to balance those two worlds, which sometimes could probably be a tension, right?
So historically, the mandate has been, and if you look at countries like Saudi Arabia, the mandate was to drive change, right? And I think over the last, I would say the last, 12 to 24 months, the focus has been on, now we've deployed all this capital, now we need to start thinking about creating and harvesting this value to create the return and the change. So I think where we're heading going forward is going to be a bigger focus on return.
Okay.
Right? And the idea is, how do we ensure that we're moving into the next phase of our growth? And how do we do it in a way that we're not going to sacrifice capital and generate the right return for generations to come?
Excellent. So it seems like the region is somewhat maturing on this journey and now moving into a stage where the performance of these companies and the efficiency and the profitability is coming more into focus, right? Whereas before you were really more in a growth phase and trying to launch, now it's more around the value piece.
I think it's a natural progression to where we're going, right? Okay. I mean, this is not going to be, moving projects and moving economies at the scale of what's being done in the Middle East requires a lot of effort, requires a lot of thinking, requires a lot of humility as well to take a step back and say, that didn't work. Let's go back and move forward let's try it this way. And I think the direction is pointing is in one way, and it's pointing in the right direction. But I think you're starting to see how we're now moving into this next phase where, how do I get these portfolio of assets to deliver the return that I want to? How do I get from here to there? And how do I start thinking about growing these assets and crystallizing this value? I've invested so much. I've employed people. I've met these national objectives, right? I've got housing is now being addressed, or if there was a shortage. There's all sorts of different discussions on how broad the economy is. I've attracted foreign direct investment through incentives. We need to now start thinking about, growing that to make sure that it's commercially viable for everybody.
Excellent. So I think that's a really good segue to move into the topic of value creation, right? Because you mentioned the word value a few times. And, when we think about value creation in the context of, say, an investor like private equity, a space that you know very well, that you work with a lot of private equity clients, you're thinking about top line revenue growth, you're thinking about cost optimization, working capital optimization, improving governance of the portfolio company. How is that world shaping here in the Gulf? This transition into a greater focus on value creation, is it really just the translation of exactly the same thing you would see in other markets, or are there any nuances that are more specific to the region?
So I would say value creation can be anything you want it to be, right? We work on value creation projects with some of our clients where we think about, how do we optimize this portfolio of assets? Where's the right home for this and this and this asset? And can it all sit and be warehoused under this vehicle? That's one way to look at it. There's also then the operational value creation, which is coming more into focus, where we're seeing across the world, right? And this is, it's just a natural progression, again, in the sense that I have these businesses and I need to start thinking about, if I want to get to an ROE of X, and to get there, I need to start thinking about, what do I need to do on the top line? How do I unlock that growth so my revenues increase? If I want to think about margin expansion, what are the topics and parts of the cost within the financial statements or the P&L that I can start to change and play around with, and to introduce value through different initiatives to then get to EBITDA that grows? And then there's that discussion on working capital, right? End of the day, no matter what anyone says, cash is king, right? And so how do I start unlocking some of this trapped cash? Maybe I reduce my accounts receivable, improve my cash collections, getting more cash back into the business will allow for some of these opportunities where that excess cash can then fund your growth, or maybe fund you acquiring another asset and allowing you to build, and which is another value creation strategy that you can employ.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so I kind of have to go back again, right? Because we started with the evolution of, let's say, investment in the Gulf, and that we said that it was moving into this stage of more, let's say, a focus on performance. At the same time, this role of economic transformation is far from complete. It's not like, okay, check, we've done it, and now let's move into value creation. It feels like now this tension is going to come even more and more to center stage, right? Where you were just talking about, for example, cost reduction. The process of creating new markets and stimulating new supply chains can be quite inefficient sometimes, right? You might need to make a decision to say, I'll buy from a local supplier, I'll buy a local material, as opposed to, say, importing from Asia. Mm. How in practice are investors actually balancing these two things, right?
So I think one point to raise as well is, you know, over the last 10 years, the region's become critical when you think about the world, right? And if you think about with all the capital deployment, the spend, the news that's coming out of the region from, you know, transforming the economy, what is needed to, you know, broaden these economies. And you're looking at logistics, you're looking at supply chains, you're looking at, you know, everything from agribusiness to retail to pet chems to you name it, right? And from that perspective, a lot of international investors are now starting to say, well, this is an interesting market, right? I instead of me just trying to come and vie for some of the capital for them to invest in my markets, I need to start looking at, you know, what's happening in countries like Saudi Arabia, what's happening in the UAE, in Qatar, in different parts of the region. And I think there is this wonderful discussion now about saying, we're very keen to invest, you know, within your technology and your business, but we also want to make sure that we can start, you know, manufacturing and localizing that here, because we want to take advantage of whatever economies of scale that we can achieve, yes, in this part of the world, right?
Okay.
So if you're close to the petchem complex and you're producing products that require petchems, you have it right there in your backyard, right?
Yes.
And that can shave off, you know, maybe percentage points off your cost of goods,
yes,
sold. And that makes you, that creates value that you can either hand over to your clients or you can keep yourself.
So would you say there's then a greater focus also from a sectorial perspective, and really focusing on sectors where the region or the specific countries in the region really have a right to play and a right to win? Because, you know, we saw over the years proliferation of portfolio companies in a range of sectors,
yeah,
right? From telecoms to mining to aviation, aerospace, defense. Do you see that, let's say, focus also coming in terms of the being much more focused from a sectorial perspective and really saying, okay, being clear about when am I playing a role that is more on the policy side of building an ecosystem,
yeah,
and when am I acting purely as an investor to generate returns? Is that tension quite explicit now?
So I wouldn't call it tension.
Okay.
I would say there's two points to keep in mind there, right? When you talk about kind of the proliferation, using your words, on the different sectors, I think what we're going to see is there's going to be a reprioritization of capital, okay, right? And you're going to say, for example, with the events that we've just seen, it's very natural for the discussion on like defense coming into the forefront, maybe,
yes,
food security, maybe supply chain and logistics and ensuring, and then maybe thinking through other parts of the infrastructure value chain. Or at the same time, it's also saying, you know, these are kind of the sectors that I've seen the most return out of, and I want to invest further in them. And that's one side of it. So the reprioritization. So I still think you'll see a national agenda that will drive a lot of this infrastructure,
okay,
spend. The other side to it is the spend that comes from some of the other sectors where, you know, they're going to have to become a lot leaner. They're going to have to become a lot more focused in their offering. And they're going to have to think about, you know, what you were referring to earlier on value creation,
yeah,
within the specific business, right? To unlock, you know, whether it's cash, whether it's top line or even bottom line.
Okay, great. And that also brings me to the point of, and I think you touched on this briefly, but I just wanted to double click on it, which is the region has always been seen as a source of capital.
Yeah.
Right, investors from all over the world fly in to raise capital,
yeah,
not to invest. That's starting to shift, right?
Yeah.
You see entities like the PIF, etc., putting much more emphasis in terms of bringing in co-investment and not putting all of that on their own balance sheet and looking at alternative ways to fund all this growth. How you see that evolving? And then later we'll get into some of the, let's say, obstacles. But for a first moment, has there been a big uptake in that, in this inward investment now?
Yeah, so I think the short answer is yes, right? And I think the region has moved from just being a distributor of capital to also attracting it. And I think there are, when you think about some of these international investors that are coming into and looking at the region, you're looking from a number of different aspects, right? One is I'm looking at these large scale projects, that these big infrastructure projects that meet my required rate of return. And I get to partner up with, you know, different parts of government and quasi-government institutions. So then you start thinking about safety and locking in, you know, different parts of the return picture for you from that angle. The other side to it is that these economies are now widening, right? If you think about, you know, 10 years ago, the equity markets in the Middle East were always a way of redistribution of wealth. So a public asset will list, it'll list at par. I could come in as a national, acquire the stake, and then immediately it starts to re-rate on the first day of trading. And all of a sudden, I've made X amount of alpha on the back of that. And these markets are developing. The region is now part of the MSCI, the Morgan Stanley Composite Index,
okay,
which is a benchmark for emerging market countries, right? So if you have... if you're an emerging market investor, now the region is investable for you, and you need to put part of your fund allocated to the region.
To the region, okay.
But then you think about the region. GDP growth is well above global averages.
Yes.
You know, the dollar-pegged economies removes any sort of FX risk.
FX risk, yeah.
Relatively safe, growing population with an ability to spend and a desire to spend and a catch-up play that's there. So,
how can I invest? I mean, this all sounded like it ticked a lot of boxes.
Right. From a macro perspective, the region is attractive and it's now coming. It was not necessarily now, it's been for years, but investors are now thinking about this region more carefully.
Excellent.
And starting to think about how they invest.
Great. And it's fantastic that you opened up this point of equity markets, because that's also one thing I wanted to talk about is, you know, equity markets are still, let's say, developing here in the region, right? There's been a lot of strides, Tadawul, ADX, et cetera, but still, of course, not to the level of dynamism, liquidity, depth that you'd see in a New York Stock Exchange or LSE or something like that. Tell me a little bit about the evolution of the more of the, let's say, the IPO environment and the equity markets here in the Gulf.
So, I mean, it's one of the more interesting and more parts of like the economy, right?
Yeah.
Because here's a way to take these wonderful private companies that have built this strong management team. They've built a great equity story, right? So it's you like the business, you like the management, you like the fact that they're capable and of delivering, and then this is their way for them to crystallize this value.
Okay.
You're on the board or you're an investor, you own this company, this private company, you say, well, what is it really worth? Well, it's worth what the market will pay you for it.
Yeah.
And now you have this opportunity to go and list part or a lot of your company for investors.
And this is a relatively, let's say, new/emerging exit route for investors, right? Where before it was maybe a little bit more some kind of trade sale or strategic sale. But now this IPO window is starting to be, or exit route is starting to become, let's say, more viable.
It's another clear way to exit,
yes,
right? So, I mean, I think one of the most important discussions that we have with a lot of our clients or private clients is, or if you want to look at how investable is a company, is whenever you walk into an investment, you want to know how you can walk out,
yeah,
right? And so you want to kind of line up. If I was going to sell to a strategic, who were the 2-3 strategics that I'd sell to? If I was going to IPO, what would be the market? And then, you know, what are companies trading at for me to have an angle in my head to know what I need to reach in terms of a threshold of maybe I need to drive EBITDA to this number, right?
Okay.
And then that's going to allow me to then list at, you know, a valuation of X, then my market cap is big enough that I'll see volume flow and I can then exit and it'll be a sizable company on the exchange. Otherwise, you know, if you don't reach that number, then it might not trade or it might not even get any attention on listing.
So, and that's the emergence or the opening of this IPO exit route probably also drives more interest from global private equity funds who now have a path, right, to exit, correct?
Well, that's one clear, you know, but I think that evolution continues, right? This is a wonderful path we're on. you know, the opening of the equity market started decades ago, but it's only recently that, you know, with the inclusion to the MSCI index, with the loosening of rules and regulations to how much you can list, to the allowing foreign investors to come into stocks, even at the IPO stage, all of a sudden that changes the entire conversation. And so now international investors are saying, well, we're moving towards, you know, where we want to be when it comes to these exit routes.
Okay. But so this is all very good. And let me just now try to get a little bit into some of the challenges, because and you can correct me if I'm speaking out of, if it doesn't make any sense. Basically, it feels like historically, some of the big investor groups have been family offices, correct? I'd imagine that the governance requirements within those family offices, board independence and all those things, are very different to the requirements of listing on a stock exchange. Right? How do you see this? It's a big culture change, right? Can you tell us a little bit about that, about this change of, okay, now we need to have a different model of governance to be ready for this, to be, you know, at par with what the global standards are for governance.
So it's funny you mentioned this, but I've been thinking about like different layers that you want to cover when you want to invest in a company, and what do you need to kind of almost sense check before you to invest in a specific company. And governance is the first layer.
Okay.
Right? And I think that's the most important topic, because for me, you need to understand what is the composition of the board? How many independent board members do you have that will not, you know, just agree, right? Sometimes when I look at companies, you want to understand, is this more of like a national ceremonial role in terms of sitting on the board? Or do we have people who understand the business, who can help drive and steer the change that needs to happen? Or are there independent board members that can specifically add value? And then that's kind of a core focus, right? If you're an investor coming into like a private business, you know, you want to know exactly who makes the decisions. Yes. And if I take a significant minority stake in this business and I have one seat on the board, am I really going to affect change? And am I going to, you know, introduce the positive change that I want, or will I be, you know, just will my voice be drowned out?
Yeah, and that's probably something that international investors grapple with, right? When they come into this, if they're new to investing in the GCC, having to understand these extra layers of complexity that come from family business and understanding the cultural context. I mean, you've worked on both sides, and you're from the region. You're a Khaliji, right? Yet you've also worked abroad, so you've seen both sides, outside in and inside out. How would you say, a foreign investor coming in? What are some of the mistakes, some of the kind of preconceived notions that they arrive with, and then they kind of get hit with reality?
The truth is, when an international investor comes to the region and looks at an asset and says, business model checks out, I like, you know, the board, I like certain different points, they miss out on certain kind of different layers that they need to kind of really mitigate and think about, right? The bandwidth of management, for example, right? You're an institutional investor, and this is a private business where a CEO has never had to answer to anybody but himself and his family members who sit on the board.
Yes.
And all of a sudden you have an international investor who says, I love what you've done with the business, but these are my ideas that I want to introduce. How do you manage that? Or you say, I need you to, you know, improve your reporting and getting me financial information, because that's important to me, does the management have that bandwidth? Certain points of like certain parts of, you know, the key driver of the revenue of a business is maybe related to a sovereign entity, right?
Yes.
Or you've got a government contract, right? And in some of these cases, these government contracts account for a massive amount of your overall business, and some people can see that as a risk. Some people can see, how do I manage that, right? Yeah. And how do I think about mitigating that risk? And so you really, it's not like a blanket kind of whatever works in some of the developed markets, like in wherever these investors are coming from, will work in the Middle East. You need to be very active. You need to be very hands-on in your approach. And you need to be, very much involved in the investment, in the portfolio management, and spending time to understand not just the culture, the business.
The business, yeah. And you touched a few times on the point of management, right? Is that a challenge here in the region? You know, like, for example, if I'm a private equity fund in Europe, I have a very deep, maybe almost unlimited pool of talent of seasoned management in across all functional areas with deep sector expertise. I have a very robust, I'm surrounded by robust industries from where I can poach different operating partners or COOs, et cetera. Is that something that you see companies kind of grapple with here, being able to find the management talent for these very sprawling portfolios?
So I would say, you know, if you think about where you drafted in management in the past, the management was basically, or, you know, brought in from wherever in the world. And the idea was for knowledge transfer, to upskill the local community or the population for them to then be able to take over. That kind of wave into succession is on track, but obviously sometimes has its setbacks and comes and but is moving in the right direction. And I think the most important thing that you're starting to see is that because these markets are now much more in under the spotlight, you're starting to see more international kind of talent also think about wanting to spend time in the region, whether it's driven by career, whether it's thinking about kind of the projects. I mean, end of the day, some of the projects that are being undertaken in this part of the world are you know, incredibly...
Well, once in a lifetime.
Yeah, transformational, yeah. Right? Yes. And so that also attracts a lot of different types of talent for people to want to get involved. And now the real kind of... The critical point to it is, how do you just go from just knowledge transfer and ensuring that there's knowledge transfer and succession? It's happening, and I think you'll start to see it.
So would you expect then, within all of this... for the capital, Gulf capital, to stay more in the Gulf, or will you expect still some kind of balance, right? So you're seeing, of course, an increase of money coming in. That's great. It means that some of, you know, not all the major projects here need to be fully funded by local capital. That's great. And it's generating also a source of return for and growth for other investors globally. But in terms of companies now sitting in the US, in Silicon Valley or in London, or can they still expect the Gulf to be a major source of capital, or is that starting to, that world is kind of past?
Yeah, no, I think, so let me address your question, 2 points. So the first point is, you know, what we saw over the last 8 to 10 years in the region was really about how do we transform the economy and how do we have kind of a vehicle, a sovereign vehicle that can start to kickstart this growth. And so the first phase was, we will fund a lot of this, get the wheels in motion, and then we will now transfer into the next phase where we will start to invite foreign capital to come in. And I think that's what the direction and the shift that's happening that you're seeing in the region. That's the first bit. The second is, when you think about allocating capital, and you always want to make sure you have kind of a well-balanced portfolio, I think there's always going to be an opportunity to invest in foreign markets, right? Okay. Whether they're in, you know, developed markets like North America or Europe, or if you're looking at more emerging markets, you know, to looking out to the East, or maybe even emerging economies, okay. Right? So I think that's also becoming kind of coming top of mind.
Okay. And then I find it quite interesting that, you know, you have, various countries, of course, here in the GCC, each with their own vision, right, in different horizons, different objectives, different advantages and disadvantages. Some have more scale, like a Saudi Arabia. Others have a more interesting geographic position, whatever. Do you see an opportunity for more integration, like, for example, between these sovereign wealth funds, a QIA, a Mubadala or IDEA, PIF, Kuwait Fund? Do you see an opportunity for some kind of GCC mega sovereign wealth fund? Is that a possibility, or is that a bit of a...
It really would depend on the mandate, right? So when you think about certain sovereign wealth funds, some of them have a mandate to invest for future generations. And so that's where they want to deploy capital and work as a natural hedge against the commodities or the production of oil. And so they might deploy capital outside, and some have a mandate where they want to be a little bit more active in driving the economy and the growth within the specific country, right? So I think there's definitely room for integration. I think there's definitely room to co-invest and to think about. And this is something we've seen, by the way, across the years. So it's not like it's something new where different sovereign wealth funds in the region invest in different countries in the GCC and be a part of that growth. But, I think every country has its, plans for its own growth and an agenda. And then at the same time, you have these investment vehicles that help you achieve that.
Okay, excellent. And I think also the overlay of all this is, of course, the energy transition is a big part here because, again, within whatever horizon you want to decide, some people are more bullish, others more bearish. But over the course of a certain horizon, oil revenues are going to start to taper off. As we know, oil revenues have been a big, let's say, replenishment source for these for these funds. So would you say that that's also driving a big change in strategy of how the capital is allocated, but also the source of capital?
Well, it's not a change, right? Mm-hmm. This is something that the governments of our part of the world have been thinking about for quite some time, right?
Great.
And it's thinking, how do we diversify away from oil? Some have had different initiatives, and some of these initiatives have been kicked off by the events and event catalysts that we've seen over the last few years.
Yes.
Right? So when you start thinking about, with the introduction of shale, right? And a lot of the countries in our part of the world start to say, well, look, I mean, we need to make room for this new entrant into the market.
Exactly.
And so how do we, we're vying for demand from our customers and they're competing with us. So that's where a lot of that work has already been done on the ground.
Okay.
And you're starting to see that.
To see it.
Right? And that's part of what you're seeing when you look at different countries with, again, the broadening of the economy, the growth in non-oil GDP, thinking through kind of different parts of the ecosystem and how Saudi Arabia can play in different parts or how the UAE plays in different parts. There's always going to be overlap, right?
Absolutely.
That's not something that's going to change. But there's also different places for different countries to shine as well and grow in different in a different way.
Great. Well, I don't want to finish this session without getting some tips from you and also for the listeners, right? Given you're an expert on this topic of investment. And by the way, I'll make a little footnote. Roland Berger is not a qualified, I don't know, whatever you have to say there, SEC.
A disclaimer
that don't make any investment advice on the basis of the, investment decisions on the basis of this. But if I were an investor from anywhere in the world, and I'm looking at the GCC to invest, to seek, good risk-adjusted returns, what would be your top two tips?
I think, really think through your diligence process, right? I mean, I think it's make sure you have an understanding of what you're looking at, what you're investing in. Make sure you have a clear investment thesis. I would say that's the most important component of it. And I think the way business is conducted in our part of the world has its nuances from other markets, and you need to be prepared. For example, the governance discussion, maybe management bandwidth, maybe even dependency on sovereign, revenues that come through.
Yes.
So I think that's a core focus, but also, and then I would say going back to making sure you know how to exit, right?
Okay.
That exit readiness is very important when you come in, which I think is already inherent in investors when they come through and look at the region.
Yes.
But I think making sure you understand kind of the steps that you need to happen, when you want to crystallize and monetize this asset.
Fantastic. Well, yeah, I've learned a lot. I hope the listeners have also, enjoyed and picked up a lot of interesting perspectives. Thank you for being here with us. It's been truly informative. So that brings us to the close of another episode of Beyond the Deck here at Roland Berger. I hope you enjoyed this this journey through the world of capital here in the Gulf. And I look forward to seeing you soon on the next episode of Beyond the Deck.